You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
I'm Kim Grinnells of Dogman.com with Chris Fetter, Scott Eklund. Start of week three of spring football 2021's practice today on the East Field. Another just really nice day out in Seattle for those out of town. Not as warm as it has been. You know, when practice starts at 8:30, the wind coming off the water gets a little bit of a chill, but we were able to take some layers off by the end of practice. And, you know, what, just for those who don't know, practice starts at 8:30 on the weekdays. And then on Saturdays, it's 10:30 and they practice for 2 hours. So it's just pretty much shells today. Not a lot of contact out there, but some guys who weren't there probably led, you know, still no sighting of ZTF.
Nope. Don't know. Don't have any sort of ideas of what's going on with him. Probably won't. We get a chance to talk to Coach Lake on Wednesday. Doubt he'll probably say much unless it's a, you know, season-ending type thing, which, I mean, you know, knock on wood, hopefully, you know, that doesn't happen. But, you know, for the most part, I saw some guys on bikes during 11-on-11 session. Richard Newton was getting warmed up. Vic Kern, Alex Cook. Newton was kind of the odd man out in the running back group today. Still got a lot of turns for a lot of those other guys, especially in the team session.
I didn't see Sam Adams again, or maybe I missed
it. Adams was around.
Oh, he was.
He was definitely there.
I missed it.
Yeah, he was definitely there.
Mickey Ayu
was not there.
Anybody else missing?
The two tight ends that have not really done anything so far this spring in Mason West, Jack Westover, or around either.
Yeah, and just we're letting you guys know this stuff more for informational purposes and, you know, reading things into it other than ZTF, you know, who looked like he rolled his ankle or his knee. You know, it's just not a lot to read into it. And just like Richard Newton with the two false positive COVID tests. So, you know, with Mickey Ayu, you know, when we last saw him, he looked fine, but there could be some other stuff. But we just don't know. And if there's anything up, Jimmy will address it on Wednesday.
Yeah, I mean, and these guys have a plan, Kim, because, you know, for instance, you know, he had a pretty severe knee injury in high school. And, you know, he came in early to be able to try to take care of it. Now, you know, it's a couple of years removed from that, so you'd hope that there wasn't any residual stuff, any stuff that he may be dealing with, but they may have still had a plan for him to be limited this spring just to make sure that he was 100%. So there could have been that, could have been a false positive. You know, Ryan Bowman, for instance, wasn't available for Saturday's scrimmage for some reason, but he was
fine today
and rolling around like he hadn't missed anything. So, you know, again, like Jimmy said at the beginning of spring, guys are going to miss practices for whatever reason. It might even be a class. It might even be something like that. It might even be school-related, funny enough. So, yeah, I agree 100%, Kim. It's just not something you really want to read too much into.
Yeah, sometimes we hesitate, you know, because we know we put that stuff out there and, you know,
people just go
off the deep end and think the worst-case scenario, which isn't always the case.
Yeah, and like Gard Memelar was back going full speed today. I know he had missed the last couple ones before that. So, you know, guys are going to come in and out for whatever reason. If they're a little dinged up, what have you. ZTF is the only one where it's kind of like understood. He's hurt. Something happened. We just don't know the extent of it. And to be honest, I think the only thing we could probably read into it is, regardless of how severe it is, he's probably done for spring. I mean, there's just no reason for him to run out in spring. I mean, he's not going to win spring.
When they plan practices, sometimes the plan of the day is to stress the offense. Sometimes it's to stress the defense. But today looked like a day to stress the offense because the defense sure had its way today.
I don't know because red zone is typically
– I was going to say.
It should be in the favor of the offense. And they did – I wouldn't say exclusively red zone work, but I would say 75%, three-quarters of the work was red zone work.
Yeah.
And whether it was one-on-one, seven-on-seven, or full team – The offense struggled quite a bit for a long time, and then toward the end of practice, that's when we saw things kind of start to light up and the quarterback start to make some really nice throws, and the receivers were getting open and getting some separation.
I was going to say, too, that Scott, you and I were talking with Hugh Millen quite a bit throughout practice today. And one of the observations he made, which I think is fully astute, and the kind of observation you would expect a guy who's watched a lot of football and a lot of practices
and coached it.
Yeah. Here's a situation where what did they focus on Saturday's scrimmage? Red zone. They had the red zone lockout. They did a ton of red zone work. And now Monday, like you said, probably 70 to 75% red zone. That to me tells me that when those guys got to see the film, they were like, yeah, we got a lot of stuff we got to clean up. And so this felt like a redo of a lot of the red zone stuff that they tried to work on during Saturday scrimmage that they felt like, okay, we need a refresher. We need something to make sure that we hone in on the very specific techniques and details to make sure that we're good to go on offense. Because this is a sticking point. This offense has not been great in the red zone in the last few years, whether it was this particular offense led by John Donovan or the earlier ones with Bush Hamden and Jonathan Smith. It always felt like the red zone at times was a bit of a struggle.
When you talk about red zone, everybody wants to have that guy, that go-to guy in the red zone. Does Washington have that guy right now?
I think
there's some guys who could be that. Kate Otten is one. He won a couple of his one-on-one battles, and maybe the throw was off or something like that. He caught one of the touchdowns. But, Quentin Moore could be that guy. He had one where he got behind the defense in the end zone, and it looked like it was hard to tell if it was a bad throw. It was a botch.
It was off schedule because of the. Yeah. It was a bad snap.
Yeah. Well, the one. Well, okay. Anyway, you're talking about the one to Terrell Bynum where he beats the guy. I'm talking about Quentin Moore.
No. Yeah.
There was still some situations where there were guys that were open and the quarterbacks weren't thrown at the right place. You could see Sam Heward a couple times not put it where the receiver thought it was going and everything like that. And he would look at Donovan and Donovan would kind of motion where he wants him to throw it. So, you know, when Heward was in there, I would give him the benefit of the doubt that he is still kind of learning where he needs to throw the ball and things like that. But Patrick O'Brien and Dylan Morris both need to be a little bit more on with some of their throws. And we'll talk about it in a second, but Dylan Morris had a pretty toward the end of the.
I was going to add again when Hugh and you and I were watching this, Scott. He took note of the completions and incompletions. We were making note of the flags that were being thrown because Jimmy Lake was throwing some flags at some of the DBs, and I think he ended up actually throwing a flag at Kate Otten on the very final one. But this was from the 10-yard line into the end zone just to set the scene. The offense went 3 of 20. The offense went 3 of 20 incompletions from the 10-yard line in, and they had three. There was three defensive flags, whether it was holding or DPI,
and then there was the one. Could have been a couple more too.
But yeah, I believe there was, but that that's Jimmy. Jimmy's the one that's calling the flags.
Yeah,
and then he threw the one OPI on Kate Otten. Three of 20. Even if you take all those other ones, even if you take the other four out, so it'd be 3 of 16. I mean, that's horrific.
Well, Hugh even said that you're expected as an offense to go about 70%.
Sure.
So that would have been 14 of 20.
And it's not just on the receivers not getting separation. I mean, because the DBs, first of all, the DBs are playing great right now. I think they're playing as
they're anticipating routes and everything like
they're
that.
They're playing at as high a level right now as any group out there. So the receivers aren't necessarily getting separation on a consistent basis, but the quarterbacks are just not making the throws.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned Quentin Moore earlier as a possible, go-to guy in the red zone, and he's listed as a tight end, but I think he's a little bit more than that, and he seems to be picking things up.
Yeah. He's looked like a guy who has started to get a good feel for what he's going to be doing in this offense and how he's going to be used.
Is he about 6'4"?
Oh, no, he's 6'6". He's legit 6'6", and about 250, 255, somewhere in there. But he can run. He runs like a receiver. And today, was that who they asked about? Because I was writing something. Somebody asked Junior Adams if he was going to try and get him over on. Yeah. And then he goes, well, don't tell Durham that. Don't tell Coach Cato that. I don't want him to know.
He certainly looks the part. I would say the other guy that I thought in that room that – didn't just show up today, but I thought he really showed up Saturday, and we talked about him again. So I think the light bulb is starting to really come on for him the last few practices is Devin Culp. I thought he looked good again. He caught one of those touchdowns from Patrick O'Brien in the 7-on-7s today.
And he was well covered on that one, too.
Yeah, and he, you know, making catches in traffic is something he needs to show consistently, something to improve on, but he's starting to do that.
On that play, too, Devin Culp, Hugh said that O'Brien had a window of about a plate, a dinner plate to throw into.
Yeah.
And he threw it perfectly. I mean, it was a perfectly thrown pass. I mean, the DB was right there and even swiped at it and he still missed it.
Yeah, so. Devin had definitely had a big game on big practice on Saturday with three touchdown passes. Mm-hmm. I like the way that they're using him not only in the pass game, but I like the way they're using him in the run game.
Yep.
He's a dynamic athlete.
Yes, he is. And I think he's embraced his role. I don't think he was quite ready to embrace it when it was first brought up to him. But as he's slowly gotten to figure out what he was going to be asked to do, I think that's when he started to figure
this
out.
He's grown up.
Kim, I would say this is a situation where this is the kind of thing you exactly want to see if you're a coach. And I'm not saying just at the tight ends. I'm talking about at any position. If you see a guy like, for instance, Jack Westover has been limited for whatever reason, can't practice. Well, in the pecking order, we would have had Jack Westover ahead of Devin Culp going into the spring. At the end of this spring, you might say now that Devin Culp might be the second guy behind Cade Otton instead of Jack Westover, and it's as much to do with Westover not playing as it is with Devin Culp taking advantage of his opportunities and running with it and doing good things.
He's doing the same exact stuff that they were asking Jack Westover to do. It's just that he's a completely, you know, you go from large and he's a double XL.
Well, except for the run part. I mean, they're not asking him to necessarily line up and do the fullback type stuff that we saw from Westover.
He's been in the backfield.
I haven't seen anybody running. I mean, like, to me, when I see running from that position, I've seen like Javon Forward, the walk on. He's gotten up to about 240.
I like him.
He looks good, but they, you know, that's very situational. So, but again, Devin Culp, I think, is taking advantage of his opportunities. I think he's made strides where a guy like Mark Redmond has been a little bit more static to me. I think he's shown flashes. There are certainly some moments where Mark Redmond, you look at him and go, wow, yeah, I can see a real special talent there. But it's not consistent yet. And maybe it won't get consistent until next spring.
We talked about the corners playing as well as any position on the field. There were some turnovers today, Scott.
Well, I only remember one.
I only remember one.
And it wasn't even the corners. Yeah. It was Daniel Haimuli who picked off a pass. To your point, Kim, yes, they're playing physical football. We didn't even see Trent McDuffie that much. It was more.
When they started running
the ones in the 11, first 11-on-11 drill of the day, it was Kyler Gordon. Michelle Powell. Mm-hmm. Michelle Powell is getting a ton of run with the ones right now. He might be a guy that just might come out and surprise some people.
Well, he's doing
a nice job. He's actually a lot bigger than I remember him.
A fall ball. Best hands in the room.
Yeah,
Michelle Bell.
Exactly. But he's bigger than I remember him. And obviously we didn't see him play all that much in the four games.
And the second corners, I think, are looking really good too. And James Smith.
The freshman.
And Elijah Jackson. Man, they just look the part. Now, they've technique, they've still got a lot to work on. But they play a physical brand of coverage.
And I know you've talked about it in the past, how they're every time I see 27 out there, I'm like, oh, yeah, that's right. That's not Keith Taylor.
Yeah.
You know, and I know Keith Taylor didn't wear 27 the last year or so. But I was thinking, it's 27, man. Who is that?
Yeah.
That guy looks like Keith Taylor.
How about Washington able to get a couple of walk-ons like Kason Kinchin and Michelle Powell? Those guys can play.
Those guys, I would wager those guys could play quite a bit at Wazoo, at Oregon State, at maybe even at a school like Arizona or Arizona State. And Washington gets them as walk-ons. And, those guys, people missed on them. They're talented guys.
I thought the best team thing today was the battle between
the two walk-ons.
Kason Kinchin and David Pritchard, the receiver. I mean, I'm sure they're fine off the field, but man, they got into it a couple times where they were scuffling. It was one of those classic things where they're, you know, Washington's doing a run play, and then the guys out wide are trying to block or trying to manhandle their guy. So they're trying to dominate them. They're trying to make sure that they know, I'm the alpha. I'm going to take care of you. And they got into it a couple times where it's slight skirmish. And then there was the one play where Pritchard literally just pancaked him.
And laid on
and just
him.
Laid on him for like 5 seconds right in front of the DBs. You know, and they're off the field. You know, they're giving him what for. And they're just – bottom line is the play is going 20 yards away from
on
him.
The other
on
side
the other
of
side
field.
Of the field. And these two guys are literally just locked in a like a battle royale. Yeah. And then, you know, guys are coming in off the sidelines. And it was fun because it really bumped the energy of the practice.
But Junior Adams also mentioned that
right.
he got in trouble because we're at second and 15 or second and
whatever it
10
was
or they, whatever it is, yeah. and they were within in a position to kick a field goal.
Right.
And his penalty takes it to second and 30 or second and 25, whatever it was.
Yeah.
And basically made it impossible. And Jimmy Lake lit up.
It looked like he lit up
Jalen McMillan yeah. on the sidelines because he said, "You cannot do that."
Yeah. Jimmy threw a flag out yeah. of his pocket.
Yeah.
I didn't know he was carrying him. All of a sudden, Jimmy's throwing a yellow flag.
Yeah. No, he had him. He was using him.
Yeah. Just people are asking about, you know, Bookie, about Radley Hiles. What are you seeing, Scott?
Well, I mean, when he plays, he's always around the ball. I mean, he just always seems to be there. He looks like Miles Bryant when he's running around doing his thing. He plays much bigger than his 5'8 listed height. I think he plays a physical brand of football. And what was funny was Kate Otten catches a touchdown pass, and as they're running back, Bookie just looks at him and he takes the ball and he says no, and he goes no touchdown. and you can see the one thing that you always worry about with transfers. I mean, no matter how great the player, how is he going to fit into the locker room? Is he going to be able to fit in with the culture that we have here and everything? And he's messing with probably, arguably, the best player on the offense
yeah.
right now. And that guy, and Kate is a pretty... For being as good as he is, he's a pretty laid-back, mellow guy. Yeah. He's not really a guy who's going to get in your face or get upset about something. But you could tell they were having fun together. And that's one thing I kind of like seeing is – because the offense and defense – and Hugh made a good point today when we were talking that with basketball and baseball, you're expected to play offense and defense.
Right.
But in football, you're specialized. You're playing offense – or you're playing defense. You're usually not playing both unless you're Charles Woodson or something like that, right?
Right.
So, but it's so separated. When I remember playing football when I was in high school and the 1 year I played in college, and I played offense. The defensive guys, it's kind of like Remember the Titans part where he goes, "Hey, this is the defensive table. You don't sit here.
Right.
You're an offensive guy. You go sit over in your other area." It's kind of like that. You aren't completely separated, but they kind of do their thing, you do your thing, and then you come together as a family, kind of like a brother and sister, brother, you know, situation where you have your own thing, he has his own thing, but when we all come together, we go to war together, kind of thing, right? Yeah.
Well, Peterson talked about that kind of whole part whole, where you come mm-hmm. together, you learn it, and then you go apart, you separate, you figure it out by position or by offense, defense. Then you come back and put it all together again.
But I like seeing Bookie, a defensive guy.
He's got swag.
Offensive guy. He's definitely got the swagger. And he's a guy who's already, I think, becoming a leader in that room.
I agree.
Yeah.
I enjoy watching him the way he plays. I enjoy it.
I know you put together a battles story.
Mm-hmm.
I got to think that battle between Bookie and Cameron Fabi Kalanen,
yeah.
I think that's going to rage on well into the fall. I think we talked about it a little bit on Saturday. I'm pretty excited about the way Fabi Kalanen has started to really come together and play.
Yeah.
And the thing about it is they're very different
yeah.
in how they do their things. I mean, they're very different size-wise, just the range, everything they do. But yet, you know, Bookie has that, again, you talk about it, has that swag. It's it's a unique feature that I think is obviously been very welcome here.
Quarterback play, I don't see any changes in the depth chart. It's all the same with Dylan Morris. I think he's definitively the number one. I think Patrick O'Brien is definitively the number two, and Sam Huer is definitively the number three. I didn't see anything that would make that even in question.
No, not at all. Not in my mind. I don't think that'll change. If that ever is going to change, it'll change in fall camp, not now. And it might not change until the season.
Well, I just think that Dylan Morris and Patrick O'Brien right now, they know who they are. They understand their roles. They know what they need to work on. They know what they need to do in order to raise the level of their game. They've been around. You know, Morris, you know, even though he played four games last year, he's been here now his third year. He understands what's going on. He understands what's expected.
And Sam was in high school 3 weeks ago.
Correct. But the thing is, that's the only thing that's going to change in the pecking order is when the light comes on for Sam. Mm-hmm. When the light comes on for Sam, then it's a whole different game. And I still don't necessarily think that means it's over for those other two guys in front of him. I just think the dynamic is going to definitely change, and the battle will be fully joined by that time.
You know, and just keep in mind, you know, I think Sam is struggling a little bit, you know, with the turnovers and just with the offense. But what I'm seeing out of Sam isn't any different than what we saw Jake Browning in his first year here, too.
No, the thing I would say about it is that he's built for this. He's built for it, whether it's through adversity or whether everything is golden. His family and the way he was brought up, and having the not just his dad around him who's been through it, but having his uncles who've been through it. He was born for this. He grew up through it. He knows it's not going to always be easy, and he knows he's going to have to fight through stuff. I mean, we talked about it a lot today during practice, Scott. He never got touched at Kennedy Catholic. I mean, never got touched. He was playing basically 7-on-7 in those games. What he's experiencing right now, it's like he's almost playing chess on top of football compared to what he was playing at Kennedy. And that's no fault of anybody's. That's just the level of competition. And they were they had outmatched everyone they played against.
Well, the thing that's interesting about Sam is if you met him and talked to him, he's one of the most polite kids you will ever deal with. Don't mistake that for competitiveness, because he's got that little bit of piss and vinegar in him. Mm-hmm. You know, and I was talking to Damon about it, and you know, I saw him at a camp, and he was lighting some guys up. And I said, he's got some piss and vinegar in him. And Damon goes, yeah, I know.
No,
so.
But he clearly has that, Kim, but it's not going to show itself.
No.
Yet. He can't let that side of him show, because he's too busy learning. He's too busy trying to drink the water through the fire hose.
That's not his place
exactly.
on this team
it's
yet.
Not, he doesn't. Yeah. He hasn't earned it. It's not there yet, and it may not be here for quite a while. But again, when that light comes on, that's when it's going to start to get special.
He was in high school 3 weeks ago. Stop and think about that.
Well, he played his last game, his last high school game, which, because it was the COVID year, it's different than any other thing you'd have. But he played his last high school game on a Friday and enrolled at UW on Sunday. On a Saturday. And enrolled at UW on Sunday.
It's just crazy.
Yeah.
We had a chance to talk to Coach Bonifa and Coach Adams post-game. You know, Coach Bonifa, you know, he's got a lot of guys in his room. And he also talked about Sam Adams. You know, there's a lot. We haven't seen flashes from Sam, but, you know, he had some really good things to say about Sam.
Yeah, he said he's smart and he's a good athlete and works hard and all the superlatives.
There were going to be guys that were going to suffer and not get the amount of turns that they should have in a normal season, because guys like Sean McGrew and Kamari Pleasant would have, in any other year, would have been gone.
But this is the biggest roster we've ever seen
for spring
football.
And on top of it,
because of the COVID.
I think I compared it to the 2016 spring roster. It's just the six guys. Basically, it shouldn't be any bigger than it is any other year, except for it's like the five or six guys that decided to stay the extra year. That's the only difference, really. But that said,
well, and they have 13 early enrollees.
They have a number of early enrollees for sure, but and that's going to continue to grow, obviously. You know, as the kids, when they start getting into high school early and start understanding that they can't slack off in ninth and 10th grade like a lot of guys did 5, 10, 15 years ago. But in talking to KB, I think in my opinion, and I don't think this is not a hot take or anything, his guys are going to be more affected by the way Jimmy Lake is wanting to run practices now than at any other time in the Chris Peterson era, for instance. Because when you talked about the running backs in spring football, you might as well have just wrapped them up in bubble wrap and just let them try to run around a little bit, because those guys were never going to get touched. Because Chris Peterson, everybody, it's well documented, he always talked about they took more punishment than any other player on the team, and it was up to them to keep them healthy and ready to go, because they aren't going to win spring and they got to do all that. Well, Jimmy Lake is like, screw that. I'm going to put these guys in the line of fire. And Keith seems to be really into it. He likes the fact that he gets to run his guys live a little bit, because of the thing is, it's turnovers.
It's cool. It's going to be interesting to see how they split the carries up, because there's just not enough carries to go around for some of these guys. You know, and will we see any attrition, you know, at the end of spring football?
Well, if you think about it, Washington probably wants to run the ball somewhere about 40 times a game, somewhere in that range. And if you split it up, I mean, you're probably only running three or four guys out there at the most.
Well, but you talk about attrition. Who would leave?
The super seniors.
Why would they decide to come back all of a sudden to leave after spring?
Well, that's see where your place is on the depth chart, because my gut feeling, I don't know if they're going to leave or not, but, you know, right now, you know, when you look at Richard Newton and you look at Cam Davis, I think those are the two guys that they really would like to see get the bulk of the carries.
Well, I think they'd like to see JV on Sunday in there too, with the way he runs the ball.
But there's one thing that's going to keep all those guys from not doing it, that Sean McGrew and Kamari Pleasant have shown year in and year out, and have gotten better at over the years, and that's pass protection.
And ball security.
Yeah, well, those
And today, you made a note of it, and I watched it a couple times too. JV on Sunday had some really nice pass pro pickups.
Yeah, he lit up Haymooley on one particular one, but there was another one right before it where he picked up the guy in the hole perfect.
What I loved was how everybody goes away from the play, and he just stood there and flexed.
Oh, yeah, he just stood there and flexed, like, I did my job. It's like, it's like, I don't care if they go for a yard or 50. I did my job. Yeah. It's like, okay.
Yeah, Junior, cool. Junior Adams post-practice had a chance to talk about the wide receiver, and sounds like he's really liking what he's seeing out of Sawyer Racanelli.
Hard not to. I mean, he has really picked it up. Would you say over the last week and a half?
I was going to say the last three or four practices. Yeah. But yeah.
So let's say week. Last week, he's really picked it up. He's just making a lot more plays. I don't know if it's just because he's getting more opportunities or I'm just looking for it a little bit more. But whenever he's in there, I'm saying to myself, I got to keep an eye on him. How's he running his routes? Is he getting open? And when the quarterback throws him the ball, is he coming down with it more often than
not? Best hands in the room?
Well, maybe most consistent.
Terrell Bynum thinks he has the best hands in the room.
Yeah, maybe most consistent. Let's put it that way. He doesn't have an off day when it comes to catching the ball.
I don't know. Bynum, to me, has had a really good spring so far, and I think he's had great hands. And he had arguably the offensive play of the day with the Morris, pass from Morris. Was it 29-yard touchdown?
Yep.
It was a phenomenal play.
Beats Julius Irvin off the line, and Dominic Hampton's a little late coming over, and Dylan Morris put it perfectly.
Yeah, right on the
mark. And I mean, Hugh even said, perfect throw.
Yeah.
You couldn't even have a better throw than
that. Just getting back to Racanelli real quick, the thing I like about him most is there was a lot of questions whether he would be a linebacker or a wide receiver. You got to love that wide receiver with great hands. It's got a little bit of a linebacker mentality to him.
I don't even know if it's a linebacker mentality so much as he's just tough, you know, and you need tough guys at wide receiver. You need guys who can be gazelles and run down the field, but you also need those tough guys who can make the catches over the middle, and he is that guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, really looking forward to seeing that. So before we wind this up, some basketball news yesterday. Washington, you know, got a commitment from Emmett Matthews. He's a wing out of, I believe it's Wilson High School down in Tacoma. 6'7", 210 pounds. And, you know, from everybody I've talked to, he's going to be an immediate candidate for Defensive Players of the Year. You know, some people I've talked to, you know, back in West Virginia said he will be the best player on the court the minute he steps on the court. So if you're just looking at points and shooting percentages and steals and rebounds, not necessarily going to tell the story on what you're getting from Emmett Matthews. Good pickup for Washington, and he'll have 2 years of eligibility to go.
Well, you spoke with him yesterday, Kim, and I thought one of the real telling parts of that interview that you had with him was his willingness to basically just say, look, I'm I'm going to go out there and I'm going to do the things that people don't like to do, whether that means getting down for a loose ball or really getting into a guy defensively. Just, you know, whatever you think that those, you know, those jobs are that aren't the glamour jobs, that aren't the high profile, you know, ones. Like you said, Kim, like it's, you know, he's not going to be out there shooting rainbow threes all day. But he might lock someone up and get a steal, or he might lock someone up and cause a ball to get thrown away. Just the little things that they needed to help them find a way to win games, game-making plays. And it sounds like Emmett Matthews understands what it takes to make game-winning plays.
Yeah, what's kind of interesting is you take a look at what's going on in basketball recruiting a little bit, and then as well as football recruiting. We're starting to see the pendulum swing a little bit more, where a year ago or 2 years ago, it was kind of the cool thing for the young high school kids thinking that leaving home was maybe the thing to do and create your own path. But when we talked to Emmett Matthews, he talked about the difficulty of COVID and being away from the family and how important it was for him to be back home to family, you know, and Terrell Brown coming back from Arizona to play at Seattle. I know that Dejon Davis, you know, the point guard up here, you know, and he went down to Stanford. He's in the transfer portal, and he's talking to Washington coming back home. Tari Eason out of Federal Way, he was back at Cincinnati, and he's talking about coming home. He's in the transfer portal. So you're starting to see a lot more of this where it's starting to swing a little bit back. It's better to be around family, and hopefully we're seeing a little bit of that with JT Tuimoloau. You know, he was down at Oregon this past weekend, but I think, you know, he's got a visit scheduled up to Washington coming up soon.
Yeah, he doesn't I don't think he's got his official visit to them planned, but I know that they want to get him on campus for an official. Yeah, I mean, they've got a shot. It's not a great one, but it's a shot.
Yeah.
And it at this point, that's all you can really ask for, considering where things were headed just, what, about 5 months ago.
Yeah, like I said, you know, we're starting to see the pendulum swing a little bit back to, you know, being in Seattle, being part of, you know, the, quote, home team and what's going on in this city.
So. Yeah, no, there's no doubt. And for sure, in talking to Matthews and hearing what he had to say.
You could hear it in his voice.
Well, the COVID, I mean, for sure. I mean, you know, you talk about Ethan Garbers and him getting homesick because he literally had to be in quarantine for weeks and weeks on end. And now you've got a situation where you see the other thing happening to a local kid, and he's having to deal with it in West Virginia, where he may get it and his friends and family who were supposed to come and see him can't come, or maybe they get it and so they can't travel to go see him. It just compounds itself. So this is a direct reflection of the distance compounding with the COVID to create a situation where he's like, I don't want that to ever happen again. I don't want to miss Christmas.
It's lonely. I mean, just being in quarantine, he said he caught COVID and he's having to be in quarantine. And, you know, then the whole team's in quarantine. You're not going to class. And then you're far away from home. And West Virginia is not exactly like Seattle. And, you know, just no family around. And what, you know, Coach Bob Huggins, he's a great coach, but he's really demanding. And I'm guessing that's not, I could just see where that would just weigh on you. And coming back home and, you know, having mom cook you meal, you know, and having dad around and brothers and sisters, it's got to be nice. And, you know, when we talk about JT, and I don't want to dive too deep into the weeds, but every time he played a football or a basketball game, there was a ton of family there.
Oh, yeah.
A ton.
There was 25, 30 people at every game. And, so, you know, it's big. But, you know, Washington still is going to – they're still a long shot to get him. But they have a shot, well, and that's like, all you can ask.
And that pendulum, like I said, it's going to be interesting to watch and see if Washington's able to get a couple more of these basketball guys to come home and create that atmosphere. Because I'm telling you right now, you know, they all talk to each other. They all talk to each mm-hmm. other. So anyways –
the basketball community is a little different, though, than the football community.
JT's part of the basketball community.
Yeah.
I know.
It's getting closer and closer, though, because football now has an outlet in the offseason with the 7-on-7s and stuff like that, whereas basketball always had AAU. And that always seemed to be a big binder for the local kids. But football's starting to make some headway on that, too.
Just quickly, Chris, last minute, anything else?
No, not really. I just think that it'll be good to talk to Jimmy on Wednesday, because there are definitely some things that we want to catch up with him on. Hopefully he might give us an update on Zion. We'll see what happens. But more, I think I want to get a recap on what he thought about Saturday's scrimmage and then also this cleanup on Monday, because they really have really honed in on the red zone stuff the last 2 days.
Scott, any last minute?
Not a ton. Thought the quarterbacks all had their moments today. Not some great throws in other moments. Offense looked much better than I've seen them in the first couple weeks. They looked a lot more in sync at times. And, yeah, I mean, other than that, just plugging away.
Yeah, just we got notification early this morning and then football practice, and we didn't see it until late, but I think we're running a couple promotions, Chris.
I don't know, I guess.
Yeah, I think everything, you know, for those who aren't subscribers, we've opened up the VIP window.
We're giving everything away.
Everything today is you can view everything on Dogman today. So
it's like going to the candy store. It's like, yeah, you can take something of everything
I'm sure the guys in the network, if they heard this, yeah, we don't know what's going on the promotion right now. We'll know in a couple hours when we're able to figure
it out. It's free VIP day, apparently. So
there you cool. go. You know, and again, if you want those breaking news alerts as well as daily updates, shoot us a note, huskystadium@gmail.com. Subject line newsletter. So we're past the halfway point, but it's good to be out here with football, especially in good weather. So for all of us at Dogman.com, I'm Kim Grinnell, along with Chris Fetters and Scott Eklund. Go Dogs!
Should you ever set foot outside of the motel, you will be shot.
Don't miss the new Showtime limited series based on the international bestseller.
For the last 4 years, I've been a prisoner.
Why are they keeping you here?
Starring Emmy Award winner Ewan McGregor.
This is the brave new world that you dreamt of.
Be very careful. You are still a prisoner here.
Everything in this new world comes at cost.
This is still my country.
A Gentleman in Moscow. Now streaming on Paramount+. Only with the Paramount Plus with Showtime plan.